Our Honest Life is a minimally edited, slice-of-life podcast that may contain vulgar language, adult themes, and sexually graphic content. Thanks for listening.
All right. Welcome to Our Honest Life with Church and Mercy. You are?
Mercy.
You
are?
And you are? Church. You are Church and Mercy. I am the audience today.
Together you are many.
No, you'll start the show. Now you have to be both of us, and I'm just going to sit back and listen. Do your best, Church.
Oh, God, no. This is going to be terrible, because I can only do Muppet voices.
Yeah.
Let's see. Say pineapple.
Say, well, all right, pineapple.
Say, well, pineapple. Like
what?
See, this is my Church. This is the... You're kind of got that Arthur Dent. You're always starting a word, but then your face shifts, and you start another word, and you're that.
Yeah. I'm a series of ahs and ers and ahs.
When you're being particularly adorable, you are, yes. But that's okay, because I'm long, drawn-out pauses.
Long, drawn, out, pauses.
Like a cat.
What?
Pauses like a cat.
Oh, jeez. So, I'm going to clear my throat elegantly. Can you clear your throat elegantly?
I'm pretty sure I've read that sentence before in books. Like, they cleared their throat delicately or elegantly.
Is it like a British gentleman in a tuxedo with tails somewhere standing on a green field with white gloves and he, like, brings one up to his mouth and he's just like, is that it? Is that it right there?
You just described the bumper between every Monty Python skit.
That guy?
Yeah.
And then the next skit starts.
It's just John Cleese standing in a field.
All right.
John Cleese can elegantly clear his throat. Maybe Werner Herzog. I don't know. But he's not British.
So, I don't mean to alarm you, but I just saw the cat
walk
by my feet. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there he is. He's behind me.
No.
He has appeared. Satan is with us.
He's been in fine
form. Satan. No.
Oh, God.
Oh, no, he's on the table now.
No, he's going to come. He's just going to knock the mouse completely over. He's going to look at it, and then he's just going to boot it off the table.
Yeah.
This cat is every single cat you have ever seen in, like, a Facebook video that just causes shit. He just knocks everything over.
The cat's butt is in my face.
Oh, he's just... Oh, God, he's gone.
All right.
He's gone. Whew, narrowly avoided that disaster.
We'll just cut the cat part out. No one needs to hear about the cat.
God damn, the cat again.
Butt in my face.
I'm going to keep that part, though.
No, don't do
I'm
that.
I'm going to overdub it.
No.
Cat's butt, in my face, in my face. Cat's butt in my face.
I get, like, put that on, like, a synthesizer, like Ferris Bueller's Day Off style, where the cat's butt. Butt, cat, face. Yeah, you'll just have it all worked out. Face, cat, butt, face, butt, face.
Butt, face, cat.
Cat, butt, face. That cat's got a butt face.
Have an elaborate Rube Goldberg machine set up to play that.
All right, cut this whole part out. Moving on. Let's actually talk about something people would actually care about. Star Wars, The Last Jedi. The internet loves to talk about it and shit on it and praise it. It's the second coming. It's the worst thing ever. It's shrug-worthy.
It's a slap
failure,
in the face.
But it made, you know, $500 million in climbing at this point.
It's not for the old fans, but also the new fans are assholes or who don't really love Star Wars.
The people on Twitter who, like, actually work for Lucasfilm are being snots about it. They're, like, actually, like, trolling the fans that didn't like it, and it's kind of not cool.
There is a significant degree of, like, thumb on the nose, na-na-na-na, boo-boo.
Yeah,
we won.
They look exactly like old men in tuxedos with tails eloquently clearing their throats. They think they're better than you. You don't like our movie? Fuck you.
Well, I guess you just don't know what class is, you heathens.
Yeah, you wouldn't know a good Star Wars story if it bit you on the butt. I think it's a fine Star Wars story. I think it could have been better, but I like the movie overall. I don't like some of the choices they made story-wise. I don't like exactly what they did with Luke. I understand why they did what they did with Luke. Spoilers, but whatever. It's just so passe to even say that. Just, look, we're talking about it, and if you don't want to hear about this shit, shut it off.
You have that power.
No, you don't. You're mindless. You must consume all forms of media. Oh, wait, they just shut us off. Fuck.
This is the voice of your conscience. I didn't like it at first, because my first instinct immediately, just because I've pretty much loved so many other Star Wars movies on first viewing, prequels included, I always had a soft spot for them. I think they're really ham-fisted and like hokey, but I still like them as Star Wars movies. There was never like, I never got out of it and I was like, I don't know about that. That wasn't fun. This movie gave me so many conflicting emotions that it took me like 2 weeks to process it, and then a second viewing to be okay. I can see and I can write in my head how we got from point A to point B and have it work out for me. But I also think it's a shitty move to bank on the love of diehard fans to just kind of have such a really chunky, inelegant way at times of moving the series forward. It just seemed like there was not a lot of forethought. Like they had this amazing episode 7, and then all of a sudden somebody up high was like, yeah, we had to kill like 5 of these characters. Like last movie, why didn't you guys do that? We don't know where we're going with this now. And they're like, oh, I guess we'll just, everyone dies. I don't know, fuck it.
Well, I don't know. I think they made the first movie. It was a humongous success. They were already in pre-production on the next movie at that point. I don't know. Maybe they didn't count on The Force Awakens doing over $2 billion worldwide. Like, it was bigger than they expected, and a big part of that was people were really excited to see Han. They were kind of mad at the movie because they killed him, though. And then they saw Luke at the end, but, like, it was the promise of, you know, the next movie is the Luke Skywalker movie. Yeah, here he is. Here's the guy you've been waiting for. The next big adventure with him, right? It's kind of the tease, and then you get into the movie, and he's your crusty old grandpa, you know. And it's, I hate to say it, it's a total trope. I'm not going to help you. Oh, no, I ended up helping you.
I've been alone and out of the loop for so long that I'm just upset over everything and grumpy, and then I'm gonna soften because I remember what it's like to be young and idealistic.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, is it unrealistic for the fans to want Luke Skywalker to be the hero again, you know, the full-on hero? A little bit, and they gave him his hero moment in this film at the end. They kind of said, here's what you want, fans, but the worst, I think some fans are like, but it was an illusion, it wasn't real, and it actually, like, literally is an illusion. And not real. He's still just, you know, mm-hmm. old and crusty and still on his island at the end. And then he dies just because the Force is hard.
Yeah.
So that's hard, right? The Force.
It's effort. Yoda, whatever Yoda said about it, you know.
Yeah, do or do earlier. Not. There is no try. I don't know. Maybe there is an amount of effort or something, but you never see it before. Like calling up Force Lightning, you think that would destroy you, but the Emperor looked like he was going to live forever. I mean, yeah. Sure, he was shriveled and gross, but, you know. He just wasn't going to die. I think Yoda just died because he's like, well, I'm tired.
Yeah, Yoda's like, I don't give a shit anymore. Why do I have to care for these earthly possessions? My body included. I'm going to go fuck off around the universe for a while as a Force ghost.
Ladies' locker rooms.
Midichlorians, Duke. Yes, midichlorians.
There's our Arlnauts call out for, well, the Arlnauts and, you know.
Yeah, and their wonderful creations.
They'll listen to this never.
The problem, I think, is that they gave us the Luke tease and they gave us the Snoke tease, and they really painted the outline of a lot of this amazing story arc that they were like, this is going to happen in the future. We're going to have these amazing stories that tell of the evil and the, you know, the good guys coming back and the heroes that we grew up with and we watched them grow up. And then this movie at the beginning is like, all that stuff that we were like telling you about, oh yeah, it's not really gonna happen. It's kind of a bait and switch where, well, it's a good movie.
It suffers from having two different directors and screenwriters, then there seems to be no overall plan. I think that's become clear. is that if there was an overall plan, I don't think we'd be having these same... we wouldn't be talking about this movie in that way. It.
Oh, we know what the overall plan is. It's merchandising and continuation of the brand.
Yeah, but I think they're missing it a bit, too. Like, if merchandising is a key part of what they want to do, you need cool-looking, awesome things. And let's honestly look at The Last Jedi. You do get the Praetorian Guards, the new, you know, Snoke Elite Red Guards.
I love how they look.
They're cool, but they're totally just wearing plastic.
Every time I see a toy, though, I go, oh, great, it's the dead characters.
What are some of your most iconic things? Well, Kylo Ren's mask. He smashes it. So he no longer has his mask, essentially, outside of one scene in The Last Jedi. And you're left with Adam Driver. Now, don't get me wrong. He's an all right guy to look at. But when I think the big, cool-looking bad, uh-uh. He needs that mask.
It's armor. It's really been established that in the sci-fi fantasy part of Star Wars, the armor is a big deal for bad guys. And not all bad guys, but when you have the ability to have iconic bad guy armor, like a mask, you take that and you run with it. Like, who cares about Cobra Commander if he's just some dude? And you could see his face, whatever.
Yeah, no, look, aesthetic is a huge part of it, right? It's a big part of what sells. Evil's sexy, at least, you know, the evil that you want to buy an action figure form.
Yeah.
But not to say Adam Driver isn't sexy, but it's like, I don't want to have a Ken doll, you know, that's the big bad of my bad army. It's a Ken doll with a lightsaber now. That's what it is.
There's a reason that the majority of the figures that are displayed really prominently in our house, I think, are characters with, like, armor or masks or transformers, like robots. Because they're cool and they're iconic looking and they're easy to see. A lot of just, like, evil dude with a face, it's just a guy in a suit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, why is Boba Fett so enduring? Even, you know, he's nothing really in terms of a character. He's a look.
And what a look.
Yeah, like, I guess. But, you know, Phasma as well, also kind of a bit of a joke of a character, especially in this movie.
Phasma's weird because they got the look right, and then they just messed up everything else. They're like, oh, I guess we don't need to have any story for her.
I know. I keep thinking back to, like, you know, we're true Star Wars fans because we pitch our own versions or ideas of things, but I think back after we saw The Last Jedi saying, you know, what do you think they're going to do with Phasma in the next film? And we sort of said, what if, you know, yeah, she escapes out of that trash compactor, who knows how, but she's disgraced now because she gave away the codes and she's been outed. She's no longer part of the First Order. They've kicked her out and she becomes like a bounty hunter and she incorporates part of the Phasma armor into like her bounty hunter gear, but it's modified and different. And then she wants revenge against, you know, Finn at that point, and she knows he's joined the Resistance or the Rebels. So... you know, she's trying to hunt him down because she believes if she can bring him in, she can be returned to her position and status within the First Order, or she hopes, you know, something like that. I just thought, you know, there's a lot more interesting sort of things you could have done with that character because she clearly, you know, was an elevated position in the First Order. You could have had her have a fall from grace. And it could be conveyed very quickly in a bunch of just, you know, really quick side shots and, you know, little stories things. And I mean, like, look what you got in The Last Jedi. They struggled with what to do with Finn in that movie. I think that's quite clear. You get this whole side story that goes nowhere. Well, what if you gave him... I mean, they tried to do it. They brought Phasma back as his nemesis, but they didn't develop Phasma at all. It was just like, oh, she's back, and there's no explanation. Deal with it. Whereas, give us 5 minutes of quick shots off and on, you know, of Phasma in her ship or something, or accepting some, you know, known contract, and she's working with, you know, she's... you know, quickly recruits a couple thugs or whatever that are going to work with her, and she has to explain, you know, a little bit of why she's taking him back in.
Like somewhere on the outer rim, and she's looking for any hint of him.
Or... if I was trying to fit it into The Last Jedi, it has to be quick, because everything happened quick, so I don't even know.
No,
let's be honest, The Last really Jedi happens way too fast. That's one of its problems, is that I think the timeline doesn't quite work.
No, it's weird. The first time that we walked out of it, I was kind of like, I have no idea how long that movie took. I think it took 20 hours. I think that's the span of time.
Well, and how much time occurs between it and The Last Jedi? Because we see...
I feel like they forgot how The Last Jedi ended. Like, they should have watched it. That's one of those things
where it's like, did you forget, like, everybody just left, you know, that Starkiller base?
Which exploded?
Yeah, Hux and, you know, grabbed Kylo Ren and returned to Snoke to finish his training. Well, apparently all that happened was immediately, instead, they launched a full-scale assault.
They just followed them. They're like, oh, we know where you are. I don't know where they were on Yavin. Well, they were on Yavin, right?
But the whole fleet wasn't even there. I thought just the X-Wings, you know, used hyperspace to show up and blow that place up. I could be wrong. Maybe I need to rewatch that.
It seemed like there was a clunky transition where I didn't know how long we'd been at places when they kind of said, this movie picks up exactly as Rey hands the lightsaber over. They're like, that's where it's going
to
start.
But it didn't. We ended up starting with a big space fight, and then we got to that. So they're kind of saying, hey, before that happened, this actually happened.
Like, was she traveling there and this was happening?
I guess so, but I'm like, I don't know. That's clunky. That doesn't really work.
And I don't know how long she spent on Octo with Luke. It seemed like several weeks.
Yeah, but it's not. It's like...
It's a night.
Two days, maybe?
Yeah, but you go through all these weird rain cycles, and it's light and dark, and it really messes with your sense of time.
Let's just assume it's space, and the sun rises and sets every 2 hours on that world.
The cycle could be different.
Now it makes sense, because that's the only way I think that works.
Yeah. I still don't think Octo has double suns. I think that was just
Octo is the planet where Luke was, by the way. I don't think they say it. I think it's just said in the opening crawl.
Yeah, and I've seen it spelled several different ways and also incorrectly as like Onkto.
Don't make too many assumptions. You gotta, think we have an audience here somewhere.
I just assume the only people that would be listening to this are people who are looking for a podcast specifically talking about The Last Jedi.
Sure, but I mean, you know. I guess we should you assume everyone knows that the writer-director is Rian Johnson? I mean...
And that porgs were put in place because Skellig Michael has a population of puffins which are protected as a species, so they...
And there's a vegetarian agenda in the movie? I mean...
What?
Chewie doesn't eat meat.
I really don't think there's a vegetarian agenda.
There is with Chewie.
Is that what... Well, Chewie feels bad because he murdered some porgs' family and was gonna, like, eat their corpses.
I don't know. Where do you place The Last Jedi in your list of Star Wars films?
Oh, it's really hard. It's definitely not in the top three, because the top three are the originals. And that's just because...
Yeah.
For me, that's where I establish everything.
So, okay, is it higher than the prequels?
I'm trying to think. It's definitely higher than Rogue One. But I'm trying to remember...
But you and I are like an anomaly. We don't like Rogue One very much, and most people are pretty okay with it. I think we just hate it because there's very little character development. No mystery. You know how it's going to end, more or less, already.
I thought it was going to be a really good war story, and it was kind of a not good anything
story. All right, so it's not Rogue One. But, so where do we... Let's take a character away on that.
I think it's between the originals and the prequels. I think it's number four. Because the prequels hold a special place in my heart.
Where's The Force Awakens?
I forgot about The Force Awakens.
Do you like The Force Awakens better or worse than The Last Jedi?
That is one I'd actually really have to think about. Because I feel like The Force Awakens got a lot of more of the Star Wars feel for me. Even though it didn't necessarily have some of the characters that I wanted to see. Like Luke and more of Leia. More of Han. But the look of The Last Jedi... is so amazing, and it's such a gorgeous movie that it's hard to say. They're really... It doesn't have as good a story or
feeling.
Well,
I think The Force Awakens is a more satisfying film all the way through.
I think so. I think...
Every character that's introduced it essentially does something, has a purpose, matters. Rey, Finn, Poe. Poe's kind of secondary in the movie, but he's still really good. You know, Han, Chewie... they all have really interesting, unique stories and introductions. And I guess that's where The Last Jedi stumbles for me. Like I said, like, Finn's story is tacked on. It's irrelevant. You could pull it out. And the movie still is essentially the same.
The problem is that a lot of the conflict that they have, that they try to jam in place, like Admiral Holdo not telling Poe the plan, or, you know, there's a couple things like that. Where they put this stuff in, they go, oh, look, it's conflict. And you're supposed to be rooting for these characters because they're coming up against conflict. I thought Poe was kind of just an asshole and that he overreacted.
Yeah,
but,
that's sort of his lesson he's supposed to learn.
But it didn't make me root for him. And that's, I think they're putting a lot of this stuff in to make you root for the character and really pull for them. But it didn't work for me. Like, there was nothing that I was rooting for Finn. There was nothing I felt he was fighting against, really, personally. No one looks at Finn and says, hey, you were a stormtrooper. Maybe your alliances aren't with us. Maybe we shouldn't be trusting you. You know, there's no conflict there where I go, like, why don't these people accept him? And he's fighting for, you know, this is something he believes in. And same with, like, Hux is just kind of like, he's just Hux and he's there. And he's like, comedy relief.
Yeah, and Hux is,
Snoke sits in a chair.
He's a pushover character. And it's an interesting contrast. What's that admiral at the very beginning in charge
Captain
of the dreadnought?
Captain Kennedy.
Sorry,
Captain Kennedy.
Kennedy? Okay.
Yeah.
So Captain Kennedy on the... It's a dreadnought, isn't it?
Yeah. Which
at
is
the beginning,
amazing looking.
It looks like a submarine, like, command bridge or whatever. It's all red and dark and...
Really low ceiling,
and he's
claustrophobic.
Like, I guess he's kind of like your old school style, like, general, you know, barking orders, and he's like... He's quite competent and, you know, imposing and casts... you really believe in that guy. Like, you'd almost be like, yeah, if I was in the First Order, you would take orders from that guy. Whereas then you see Hux and you're like, he got trolled and had some mama jokes thrown at him.
And then Snoke literally wiped the floor with him.
Yeah.
He just, like, force slammed him into the floor and just, like, spun him around.
He was a chamois. He was his own personal chamois.
There were so many...
Which is fine. For a Star Wars movie, it's okay. But
scenes for me.
But if you cut the movie a bit more serious and you had Hux playing more like that other... what was his name?
Kennedy.
Yeah, what's his title?
Captain.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, if you had that guy who just knows you can mow almost anything down with force, but then he understands when you can't, and he's like, you idiots, we're fucked now.
Yeah, I don't know. The comedy, there was a lot of comedy. There's always comedy in Star Wars, but I don't like comedy at the expense of characters. And in this, it was all at the expense of Hux, a lot of it. You know, Poe mocks him. Snoke, you know, wipes the floor with him. Kylo's always throwing him around. And I really like the actor, Domhnall Gleeson.
Donal Gleeson.
Sure. That guy.
Oh, yeah. And they make him kind of like a pissy... mousy coward type, where he's got his blaster out and he's maybe gonna shoot Kylo Ren as he lies unconscious, but the second that Kylo starts to come to, he holsters it, and it's like, it's so cowardly. And I feel like Hux at that point would have just been like, just shot him in the head. The Hux from The Force Awakens, where he seemed a little more like he was willing to be bloodthirsty or ruthless to advance. And to advance his cause. Like, that guy would, like, was, like, screaming this speech with, like, spittle flying from his mouth on Starkiller Base in The Force Awakens. And in this one, he just seems meek and timid.
Yeah. Yeah, something's missing. Because he's a true believer, right? Like, that's sort of what The Force Awakens sets up, right? He's a fanatic. He's totally fanatical and devoted to his cause.
He's a zealot.
And in this one... Though, I do like the moment where he was, like, going to kill Kylo Ren. Like, he starts to draw his blaster when Kylo's unconscious. That's probably the only scene where I think I like his character. But he's just a wily snake at that point, right? That's always he's really showing. Whereas, I don't know, swap him out with that captain guy. Let's just put that captain guy in Hux's spot. And he wouldn't draw his blaster to shoot him. Instead, he'd be like, you know, wanting to wake him and want to know what happened. And
well, yeah, you get all the information you
no,
can
he'd be,
out of
he'd
him.
Be treating the scene very serious, like, yeah, your supreme leader's done, but now what? And Kylo is, you know, on our side and part of... If you're a true fanatic and you were fanatical to Snoke and you saw that Snoke recognized Kylo Ren, I don't know. Like, they kind of made them, in The Force Awakens, kind of, you know, competing for Snoke's attention. But if Snoke's gone, I don't think that competition exists anymore. Instead, he should be, you know, having that conversation. They should be having that conversation of what's next now. How does this work? And he's like, well, I'm the supreme leader. Well, how come maybe I'm not? And he's like, well, you don't have the force. And then maybe then he crushes him a bit or whatever, right, to demonstrate it at that point.
I was never really sure, and I might have to go and rewatch The Force Awakens again, if the First Order was built on the concept of Snoke having the force, or if this was just somehow everyone is following this guy. Like,
we don't know. None of that information is present, which is a big beef, right? And everyone always says, oh, we didn't need to know anything about Snoke. We never knew anything about the Emperor. You know, we don't know how the Emperor was there. But I think what people are missing is when we first heard about the Emperor in the very first Star Wars movie and then in Empire, yeah, he was always there and in charge, because that's an accepted status quo that's always existed as far as we know, that the Emperor is in charge. You know, we don't know much about that at all. And I guess it is a bit of a critique of those original films. They don't tell you a little bit more about them. But then to go into your next trilogy, knowing that your trilogy is a sequel to the previous trilogy, a very important piece of information is, where did the First Order come from? And where
what
did this new...
the Empire bits?
Yeah, and where did this new dark force user come from, you know, that they followed? And it doesn't have to be a huge complex explanation, but you should give us something. You know, it's a sequel to that trilogy, meaning like these mysteries need to be explained, or they should be.
Yeah, how do we transition from the end of one into the beginning of the other when the end of these stories is always the absolute destruction or dissolution of a gigantic piece of power that was oppressive? And then now people are out from under its yoke, but there might be still pockets of it left in the galaxy where people, you know, other groups that are going to come up and they're going to scoop up the people that were part of it, and they're going to get them on their side now. Like, there's so much story that you could tell there really quickly. Just be like, you know, after the Empire was destroyed, you know, something rose up in power. It was Snoke. How did he get all these people? How is it there? They introduced part of a universe. The ending, you know, where we leave off is pretty clear. And then all of a sudden, it's just all different now. Just accept it.
Yeah, and I don't know. And there's been talk that, you know, they're saying, oh, don't worry, they'll answer that in episode 9. They'll tell you who Snoke was. But if the character's already dead, I'm not interested.
Why are you still talking about him then?
Well, because they'll talk about him because they know people are mad that they didn't talk about him before, so they're going to write it into 9. Like, that's what'll happen. But the thing is, you know,
it's just going to be
Snoke rose from the whatever, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, yeah, but he's dead. It's not that interesting anymore. It'll be something Kylo Ren delivers, some speech.
Oh, yeah, Hux is going to start comparing him to Snoke.
It'll be one of those things, like, you know. Yeah, it's going to be so.
Because Kylo's like, oh, I'm different now. I want to take over the universe, but I'm totally not like these other two groups that were also doing it.
All right, so you're not sure where you put it. It's somewhere in the middle is where you've got
it's
it.
It's in that's the what middle,
I,
yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I think that's ultimately where it ends up. I mean, in terms of being directed in the cinematography in the movie, it's excellent. It's a beautiful, beautiful movie, like top-notch. It's a 10 out of 10 in terms of like appearance. It could have used more aliens. I'm finding the Star Wars mm-hmm. universe is a lot of humans, and it didn't used to be a lot of humans. There, it used to be grubby and lived in, and there were Rodians and Twi'leks and, you know, Thorians, like everything, just wandering around all over the place. And now you get, you know, there's Neenum sitting on a bench and some yak-face-looking X-Wing pilot again, and we're going to go to Canto Blight, and we're going to see some weird little, you know, mole man with a monocle putting coins into BB-8 for a second. But it doesn't feel like the same Star Wars universe. It feels like
it's set
the
dressing.
Human universe. It's not set. Yeah, like I'm like looking at the rebels again. Looking at the rebels on their bridge. Aside from Admiral Akbar, who got blown out into space with like barely even any acknowledgement. So long, Akbar. There's like no aliens. There's just none. It's really barren. And yeah. I'm not a fan of that. And it's, you know, people talk about how this movie reminded them of Battlestar Galactica. Well, Battlestar Galactica just looks like people and robots. I saw droids and I saw people. Like, yeah, I get the Battlestar Galactica comparison. Anyways, overall, the movie's super beautiful. It it's not the way I would have depicted Luke. I would have made a few different changes. I would have done something different with Finn. Finn is a very... Oh, he's so wasted. And John Boyega is so amazing. Even in this, you know, running around on a useless errand, he gives it his all. Like, he's excellent, excellent acting. But it's just a nothing story, unfortunately. And I want him to be so much more important to the main story.
They kind of touched upon the barest of why he's really even still there, which is, I'm here for my friends, when he's trying to make sure that Rey is able to get back to them.
Yeah, but huge, huge wasted potential.
There should still be a conflict within Finn where he doesn't quite see that this is the way to go, because he's still seeing people dying and his friends in danger.
And he's doing that thing where he's running away again right at the beginning of this film, and it's like, no, he learned his lesson in the last film about that, so I don't understand why he's running away.
Well, all of a sudden he's trying to run away so that Rey doesn't go
it's
to
super
the fleet.
Flimsy. It's really, really yeah. flimsy.
It's
a bad story arc for him. It really is.
There are parts of the movie that don't work.
Poe's important because I see they're making him into the military leader, right? Like, he's going to be in charge of the rebellion in the next one. So he's going to take over Leia's spot, essentially, and you know, Holdo's spot. Holdo, is that her name?
Holdo,
whatever. Yeah. Purple hair, pink hair, pinky purple.
Laura Dern.
Dernsy. Mom jeans. Forever mom jeans from Jurassic Park.
I just remembered that scene in Jurassic Park where she sees this Triceratops.
She's more attractive in this movie to me than she's ever been in her entire life.
I could write some kick-ass Leia Holdo fanfic where it talks about them being good friends and in the rebellion and working together, and Holdo was always the one that was more into the fashion part, and she was always beautiful.
She's in the books.
She was fierce fighter. Yeah, totally. I'm sure that this story exists already.
I think she's in that Bloodline book, or she's in one of them.
Oh, I plan to read that after I finish Murder on the Orient Express, which is totally not Star Wars related. It's just something I'm
reading. Have to be. This isn't a Star Wars show. Though this one is, apparently. Yeah. So I don't know. I got a lot of critiques of the movie. The story is not great. The acting is great. It's shot great.
The parts that are serious and more like Star Wars are amazing.
It's like Rian Johnson only really cared about Rey and Kylo. Like, you could tell that's where he put most of his attention and thought.
Yeah. There's so many scenes that are just them looking. They're looking off or hand.
Yeah, and Adam Driver does a really good job. I just worry that he's now he's the face of the New Order, and it's not a mask anymore, it's his face. And I like his face, but his face is kind of goofy. He's a Ken doll. He's a giant Ken doll in black, garb, who's,
Like that, I think that
so
was...
So I equate it to toys, and it's just Ken.
That was always part of it for me watching, was you get this really imposing figure in this mask, and then he takes it off, and it's like... Aw, shit, that dude's beautiful. Look at his hair.
Well, yeah, that was great. But then he kept hiding because he wanted to be intimidating. And I guess I get the story progression. In fact, in terms of story, it's wonderful. But in terms of Disney being a marketing thing, I'm like, I think that's a mistake. From a business perspective. Not from the movie perspective. From the story perspective, actually, I applaud it. I think it's great because it kind of made the marketing secondary, because it's going to be harder to sell your Kylo Ren toys.
Let's be honest, though. Disney is not really great at marketing. They are great at just vomiting products onto the world.
I guess so. If I think about Disney merchandise, I kind of hate most of it.
Like,
I think it's kind of tacky.
In the Disney store today, and 99% of the stuff in there, I just go, oh, God, it's just... The store makes me feel uncomfortable because it feels wasteful and consumeristic and not in a good way.
Well, they try to put that charm into everything, and it's like... But they're like... It's manufactured.
Yeah, it doesn't feel...
It's not legitimate. It was it was legitimate in your movies, but you're paying all these people to say and act this way when I walk in the door. And your Fungineering's going to make me puke.
I just look at all the toys. All
right, we're way off. Okay, so overall, though, you put it in the middle of the road.
Yep.
As I think I do, too. In terms of just rating it, though, as a movie, I would rate it higher than a lot of other Star Wars movies. But in terms of a Star Wars movie, it's middle of the road.
I totally agree with that. It's a good movie. As a movie, if this was just random space sci-fi fantasy, you know, movie that someone, you know, like a Valerian type movie, I think that would be fantastic. Where you've got some pretty neat villains, you've got some beautiful scenery, you have a story. I think the story can be shored up a bit. I think the comedy can be tamped down a bit. But overall, it would be an enjoyable movie. But in terms of Star Wars, some of the bar is set to a certain point.
What do you mean by that?
So the bar for like character interactions or the way that the tone of certain scenes goes, there'll be a like a jovial, fun atmosphere to certain scenes, like Lando and Han and Leia and everyone in Cloud City, where you get this really light kind of feeling, and then immediately it goes dark. And it's fun, but then kind of in The Last Jedi, the fun stuff, it feels like Airplane or Spaceballs. Like, it's goofy,
yeah,
like teen humor,
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, it's, well, it's that modern day Marvel
and then, you know,
style shtick. And
500 people get blown up on a ship, but hey, we're cracking jokes and Kylo Ren's not wearing a shirt.
Well, that part was wonderful. But the part where, like Finn's wandering out in his Bacta suit, you know, shooting out water, yeah, everywhere, and, like, Poe runs out to him, hey, buddy, you're leaking. So good to see you.
Yeah, Finn and bag the, leaking.
Yeah.
Blow a fuse or something?
Well, it was okay, but why is he just up wandering around? How did he not encounter anyone else on the ship?
They
how
just shoved
no one
him
else
in a supply closet.
It didn't make an awful lot of sense. None of it. You know, I think that's the biggest problem. You start to scrutinize the film, and it doesn't really hold up in terms of, like, making a lot of sense.
Yeah, so that I think that's where I'm saying, like, the bar is for the originals, that world, people did things that made sense. Luke worked on a moisture farm. He had to go into places to find, you know, oh, I've got to do these power converters. I've got to get to Tashi Station. I've got to do all this stuff for my uncle. I've got to give these droids an oil bath because we're going to use them on the farm. The stuff is done for a reason. And there's a functioning world that exists that these characters interact with outside of them. And then with this movie, it's like these characters exist in free space where they do whatever they need to do, or they just wander around and no one ever stops them. The closest that they come up against, like, a real world, like, the rules of the real world, is when they're on Canto Bight and their ship gets, like, you know, impounded, where the owner is like, you can't park here. You can't just park a ship anywhere. And that's the only time when it's, like, a plot device.
I guess. Like, I don't know. There was very little world building. Canto Blight is the only example in the whole movie of world building in the whole thing. And unfortunately, it isn't very fun. It's not very good.
Because it's all built on exposition. Hey, this beautiful place you're looking at is actually shitty and built,
yeah,
on the backs of slaves.
Yeah, it exists to serve a purpose. And whereas Tatooine, like, you go back to A New Hope, where they go to Anchorhead the first time with Obi-Wan and the droids and Luke, and it's there just because that's just the town that's there. They're just going to it because it's the closest settlement, because they're going to take they're looking to catch a ride with someone, and you just get to see what life there looks like. It didn't have commentary. It wasn't trying to also, you know, tell you something, and it wasn't part of the plot device structure. The whole thing exists just for a couple ham-fisted messages.
I think another part that bugs me is it took some of the beauty of the originals and having a world where things were kind of shitty and there were slaves and people had bad lives, and then it pasted on some of that really schlocky feel-good message from the prequels where, yeah, there's child slaves, but they're having fun. Like, Anakin's a slave. His mom's a slave. The other kids around him are slaves, or they're, you know, they belong to someone, or they're orphans. And this movie is like, oh, these kids that are getting whipped with, like, the electro whip, well, there's absolutely zero repercussions for them unleashing all the animals and causing havoc. It's weird.
I don't think they knew the kids were complacent in it. Because I think she gave the kid his ring, and he's a secret rebel now, so they took the blame, right? Oh, how did they do that? Well, they all did it, right? Because they were chasing, you know, Finn and Rose.
In the originals?
You're making an assumption.
No, like, in the originals...
That they got caught.
No, it doesn't even matter if they got caught. Because in the originals, when the stormtroopers come looking for the droids, and they talk to Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru... They just outright murder them and burn their bodies because they're trying to cover this shit up. There's no reason to know that they had any information, but they're just like, fuck it, burn them.
Well, they track the droids to them.
But then the droids aren't there.
The droids aren't there, and Luke's gone with them. Where they go, and they don't know, and they probably don't want to sell out Luke, so you can fill in the gaps on what happens.
But they have no reason to believe that these people would be lying to them. Just be like, oh, the droids aren't here, I don't know where he went. They would also be concerned.
No, Uncle Owen probably knew where he went. He probably figured he either went to Anchorhead or he went to, you know, something like that. Well, or no, maybe he's telling the truth. But Uncle Owen... always protected Luke. So even if he had a hunch where he was, he wouldn't tell them.
But what I'm saying is that, like, the Empire is also antagonistic to the people. So yeah, the people don't trust the Empire. You know, they don't trust them for a good reason. Because the Empire, if they think you're even involved in something, they're going to burn you to death. Like, yeah. There's a danger involved there simply by existing in that world.
Yeah, stormtroopers, well, you don't fuck with them, right?
Yeah, like, they will murder you.
Even on Tatooine, which isn't one of their worlds, it's outside of their jurisdiction technically, but they're there, and so they're pulling people over, asking them questions, and yeah, and we know they, you know, murdered, you know, Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru.
They're the Empire. They might not be on your world, but they have so much pull that if they come there, most people are still going to listen to them because they don't want to die.
Yeah, they did a good job of showing... that people feared the Empire. There's no demonstration of seeing people, regular people, interact with them.
Yeah, there's no...
It doesn't exist in
First
these movies.
Order on the world. I don't know what everyone else in the universe... Because the Star Wars universe is huge.
Not in these movies.
I know, it exists on like two ships, apparently.
Yeah, like even in The Force Awakens, you do see some stormtroopers, First Order troopers on Jakku, but... You only see them from a distance. You don't actually see them interacting with people, asking them questions, or, you know, really grilling people like you did in the originals. Oh, well. Anyways, we're really beating one tiny point to death here. To death. It's dead. It's dead. We cut all this out.
I could talk about Star Wars.
You have.
Forever. Forever. Name a topic you could go on about.
I don't know.
With no preparation.
Star Wars movies, though, need to have, you know, moments where, like, strong highs where you really enjoy it off and on. And The Last Jedi definitely has those. It has a lot of moments that are really strong, but it has a lot of other moments where you're like, this is just stupid.
So what's the moment that's really strong for you?
In that movie? So the opening space fight, actually, is pretty good. Not the part where Poe's talking to Hux, that part's kind of silly, but I like, even like from the go after the crawl fades away, and you follow, the camera starts zooming forward through space as you're following the ships as they're like going towards the planet. I really like that. And then all the ships are, you know, taking off and evacuating, and then, yeah, Poe's dialogue kind of sucks, but then he launches towards the ship, and it's a single fighter versus, you know, all the TIE fighters, and they're kind of laughing at it, and it's a little bit crazy, and I really like the sense of movement and scope and all that. I think that's a great high. What else is a great high in the film? When Rey and Kylo fight all the Praetorian guards, I think is a great high. Even the whole confrontation with Snoke is actually really good. That whole scene in that room is good. I think they waste Snoke, unfortunately. There's some missed opportunity there to fill in some story... gaps that still exist, or holes. It's not plot holes, it's just it's voids that need to be filled understand the universe a bit more, and they missed an opportunity to do that. But I think that scene is a high, though, like from the moment, even the interrogation, that whole bit. Although I don't necessarily like the scenes, I don't like them from a story beat perspective. The flashbacks to Kylo and Luke, where, you know, you see it from the two other perspectives and then get the truth somewhere in the middle, like, that's pretty cool. But yeah, the whole Praetorian fight with Rey and Kylo is really, really strong. What else? The Millennium Falcon scene where Chewie's piloting it, and all the ships go after him. because Kylo hates that ship so much. You know, he's like, destroy that ship. That whole scene's great. And, you know, the music callbacks with John Williams to Empire Strikes Back during the, you know, asteroid chase scene and all. It's wonderful. What else? What else is really good? Well, when they all shoot at Luke, all the, like, everything mm-hmm. Kylo has, every single AT-AT and the whole bit, that's another high. It's wonderful. You know, really strong beats. You know, Luke's passing, although I'm not a fan of how it played out, it's still done really well. So that's where I'm conflicted on that. It's a really well executed and laid out. You know, it's got foreshadowing, the whole bit. Everything's all laid out there. You know, it works in the confines of that movie. It just ticks off a lot of Star Wars fans.
Oh, yeah. Like, on a second viewing, everything flowed. Every scene was purposeful. Every piece of dialogue that was there was done for a reason, to echo back to something or to push forward to the next scene. The way that it's written and filmed and moves is beautiful and masterfully done, I think. But there are parts where it doesn't work, and it just needed to be tightened up in places.
It needed to be tightened up, yeah. But also, it could have been done. It's so fixable. That whole movie is so fixable.
And one of the weird thing is I'm seeing kind of some of the pushback against the people, the higher-ups, or like people who either work in the industry or review and like love movies, and they get mad at people saying like, oh, you know, we were promised a Snoke story, we were promised stuff about Luke, we were promised all this other stuff, and they're kind of like, you should just be happy with what you got, it's beautiful, there's other stuff, you know, they didn't actually promise you that. But no one's stopping to take a second and go, hey, they really wanted to know more about this character, we could have given them so much more. Yeah. And they would have loved it.
There is an arrogance coming out of some of the people that work in the industry. Just be thankful for what you're getting. And I'm like, well, I pay for it, though. And so does everyone else. Like, I give you money to go see these things multiple times. I buy your goofy action figures. I'm your customer. And you're letting me down as a customer right now. You're failing me for... Your whole purpose is to entertain me. That's what you're there to do. Maybe you forgot that. And you failed a bit.
Yeah, like a huge portion of the audience is saying, hey, this is why we follow this franchise, for these awesome stories. This was a story that you kind of strung along in front of us. We were really excited, but now it's not there. We'd like that story. And it's like, ah, no, we're moving on to something else.
All their marketing, too, was on, like, don't let anyone spoil it for you. So, like, you think there's going to be huge revelations and twists. The big twist was there was no bloody twist. They kind of teased you with a few of them, and then they didn't happen. Is Rey going to flip? Is Kylo going to flip? What's Luke going to do? What's going to happen to him? I guess the biggest twist is I saw Yoda, and I wasn't expecting that. That's it.
Oh, yeah. When Yoda comes on screen, I was like, oh, Yoda.
Yeah.
And no, it's Yoda.
It's a good crowd-pleasing moment. He's a little bit extra goofy. He does things that makes you question everything you know. Like, oh, can a Force ghost just show up and call down lightning anytime they want? Oh, well, why don't they just pop into Snoke's throne room and zap him with lightning? But anyways, well, we won't worry about that.
I have thoughts on that, but...
Yeah, it's called shitty writing.
No, you gotta rationalize it. Like, once you become one with the Force and a Force ghost, you know, you let go of all those earthly things, and part of that is... the concept of good and evil or something, some bullshit like that, is you, everything moves and flows, and it doesn't belong to any one person, and it all feeds into the other. The whole thing, you know, Ray was saying about...
Sure, so why doesn't Yoda just still appear, though, enlightening everything that he doesn't like?
Because he doesn't care as a Force ghost. He understands that.
He cares because he cared enough to show up in lightning a tree. If he didn't care, he wouldn't show up for that. He wouldn't show up to even correct or help Luke because he cares.
Lightning a tree.
No, think about it. He still does care. He's still Yoda. He still thinks bad is bad, and it needs to be opposed. But apparently, he has the power to completely oppose it and stop it anytime he wants.
Well, think of it like if you saw an anthill, and you saw that the ants were just living their life, you'd probably just walk by it daily. But if you saw that, like, some asshole kid was, like, pouring bleach down the anthill, you might be like, hey... stop pouring bleach down that anthill. That's not nice. Maybe Yoda's so high above us, or us, you know, he's so high above the consciousness of living beings when he's part of the Force, but that when he sees something really bad, he's like, ah, I should put a stop to this. But overall, those ants are fine. They're doing good on their own.
No. No. I disagree. Why did he get Luke's attention? Because Luke was pouring bleach? That's what your analogy is telling me? He was bleaching some ants. No. Obi-Wan, as a ghost, was still also watching Luke. Like, we know...
Watching him undress.
Yeah, but all the time. All the time.
Think about that. Can a Force ghost... Do they just peep on people?
Yes.
Midichlorians, Duke.
Like, think of Return of the Jedi when Luke's rocketing away and Obi-Wan ghost is standing there with Yoda. And, you know, Obi-Wan's like, that boy's our last hope. And, like, Yoda's like, no, there isn't. Like, they're still watching people. They're still having conversations. Obi-Wan is just hanging out, chatting with Yoda as a ghost.
Okay. I can see it to your point. See, that's, I think, part of this movie suffers from that. You can make it work, but does it actually fit with how everything else has kind of gone before? And in terms of, like, I know I hate the whole canon argument, but there are things that are established in the movies.
Well, I think if you've seen the movies, that's really all that kind of is.
Yeah.
There's film canon, right? I mean, you can say whatever else you want as counts as canon, but the reality is for some people, they'll only ever see the movies.
And
in the context of the movies, does this fit? That's sort of the question you always have to ask yourself.
Yeah, if I was watching these movies all in a row, am I suddenly going to be confused because they switch it up at one point and they're like, oh, actually, this is how it works now. And you're like, but you just spent like four movies establishing that it does not in fact work like that.
Yeah. Well, it's like that kid at the end levitates the broom into his hand, but he's never had any training. But I've seen the prequels and I know they find children at young ages and they put them through rigorous tests to even prove that they have the ability to use the Force.
So they have to be
taught.
The other kid is retelling the story of Luke on Crait using his Force powers. So the story gets out. The kids know about Force powers. And this kid is just like, yeah, I just Force lift things all the time.
Yeah, when did that happen, too? Because, like, is it the next day? Because time is just a big mess in that movie. But apparently it's been long enough for that to get around as, like, you know, a story that slaves tell each other.
Yeah, the legend. In the pens.
I think that happened yesterday.
Yeah. So who is telling these stories,
too? Know.
Because, like, the Rebellion used Leia's call sign and nobody answered. So are these assholes just be like, the legend of Luke Skywalker on Crait?
Well, anyways, as we were saying, lots of problems with the film, but it has a lot of high moments. It's shot beautifully. It's acted really well. The script is the problem. So, you know, and this is where I waffle, because the script is such a problem at times that it dips to, like, a failing grade for me. But then the highs are so wonderful and awesome, and it's beautiful, and it's shot well, and it's acted well. And then I'm like, no, it's more like an 8 or a 9 out of 10. And I'm like, no, there's so many story issues and setups, and it thematically doesn't understand its predecessors very well. It doesn't link in the proper way it should, and it just makes new stuff up that, you know,
kind of makes you think,
I don't know how the Force
works
anymore, because how I thought the Force worked apparently isn't true. And I'm just supposed to accept that. And I think that's the problem, is that's kind of the message. Just accept this. And you're like, nah, I don't want to.
But there are certain... And it's not even to say that you can't just accept things. Because when Kylo Ren pulled back a blaster bolt in The Force Awakens, I was blown away. I was like, hell yes, that's amazing.
Yeah, that was cool.
That's part of the Force use where I'm like, oh my God, I guess they actually could possibly do that. Because, you know, of other things I've seen in the movies, like the originals, where I go, yes, I guess naturally this could be a progression. But then there are parts like, oh, you don't have the ability to use that Force. You would die because it's just too hard.
Yeah, I don't know. There's slapstick moments with the Force in this one.
I think Rian Johnson loves Airplane and Spaceballs. Like,
sure.
As much as I do, but maybe he shouldn't have written so much of it into the movie.
I love them too, but I don't know, that part where Rey tries to pull the lightsaber to herself first and Snoke, like, makes it zip around the room and smack her in the side of the head, and I'm just like, All right.
I'm just,
so,
like, Poe Dameron is really, let's just admit that he is Bill Pullman's character from Spaceballs.
I guess that's the problem with the film for me. There are moments where it's like a 2 or a 3 out of 10. And then there are other moments where it's a 9 out of 10. And it just seesaws back and forth between that. And I think that's why I struggle with it.
Yeah, for every giant, epic,
the prequels
awesome
are the same
space
problem,
battle, Captain Kennedy, you know, stomping around on his deck.
It's lumped in there with the prequels, I guess. It's probably the best of that group, but I guess that's where it ends up because of its inconsistencies. I still like it, but I mean, I like all Star Wars.
I'm glad I saw some parts
in Rogue One. I guess that's the nice thing about this movie. It's very enjoyable to watch, even if it has all these other little faults. It's an easy watch.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I love the Captain Kennedy parts, but then I'm also yelling at the screen going, that doesn't happen when you run out of fuel in space.
All right. Do you have any closing comments? I'm good. I'm done.
No, I'm good.
So thanks for listening to us. We've been on hiatus for a long time, but here, have some Last Jedi fun from us. You know, let us know what you think. Disagree. Agree. Just be nice to us. That's the only thing we ask. We've seen a lot of pissy folks out of there, but hopefully most of that wave's done by now.
Yeah, I mean, listen to what we're saying in terms of it's a good movie and we like it. But
I'd love to debate and talk about this endlessly with anyone, but in just a nice way.
Yeah.
All right. Take care.
Have a time.
Thanks for listening. This has been Our Honest Life with Church and Mercy. If you'd like to know more about us or have any questions or comments, you can find us on Twitter at Our Honest Pod or contact us through email at ourhonestlife@gmail.com. Thanks again.